Produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall, this is Yes Music Podcast episode 458, Big Generator versus Drama.
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 458 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along a little bit later on. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. Before we start this week, we need to send best wishes for speedy recoveries to friend of the podcast, Dave Watkinson, and his mum, who are both unwell at the moment. You are both in our thoughts and prayers, assuming you do that kind of thing. It's been a very interesting task to compare and contrast Big Generator and Drama this week. Mark and I have hopefully come up with some thoughts which are of interest to you. As always, please add your own comments to the show notes for this week. We'd love to hear what you think of these two albums in our latest shootout. You can't have escaped the fact that it's been Thanksgiving in the US this week, and when this episode is released, it is Black Friday. Happy holidays to all. This year, YMP has jumped on the proverbial bandwagon, and the Emporium is offering a special deal from 27th of November to the 4th of December. If you'd like to order yourself one of the full Union Art prints, you'll also receive one of the Answer Is Yes trivia games for free when they are released. Sounds like a good deal to me. Head on over to yesmusicpodcast.com/shop and tell all your friends. Incidentally, the trivia cards are at long last finally going into production in the next few days, and the turnaround looks like it will be pretty fast. So not too long to wait now. Around the social webs this week, and starting with the YMP Facebook page, I reposted Scott Shaw's news about the Levin Torn White album, which is about to be produced on vinyl. If you haven't heard it, it's a real progressive rock treasure, and I'm supporting the venture. Only 300 records will be pressed, so get in fast if you're interested in one of those. Mark has been hit by a new COVID lockdown, which seems to have affected both his internet connection and progress on his own record release. And Preston Frazier has reviewed It Was All We Knew from Heaven and Earth. The new edition of Prog Magazine features John Anderson on the cover and inside, with news about the forthcoming reissue of Elias of Sun Hillow, and John's second solo album, Song of Seven, is also re-released today, as I record this, on CD from Cherry Red Records. A fine time to be a John fan. In the community posts, it was very much anniversary week. Doug Curran posted the following. His 8-track tape of Fragile on its 49th anniversary, his signed copy of Yes Shows on its 40th anniversary, the re-release of Rick Wakeman's Aspirant Trilogy, that's Aspirant Sunrise, Aspirant Sunset, and Aspirant Sun Shadows, a charity compilation in aid of Parkwood School to raise funds for their minibus, and the Downs Syndrome Association, coordinated by BBC Radio Derby's Ashley Franklin, with contributing artists including Rick Wakeman, Robert Fripp, John Wetton, Peter Hamill, Anthony Phillips, The Enid, No Man, Roy Harper, Gordon Giltrap, Kevin Coyne, Celtus, Biosphere, and many more. And his signed copy of Steve Howe's Beginnings on its 45th anniversary. Geoffrey Mason's haul this week includes a review of Story of I by Patrick Mraz, ABWH fill-in bassist Jeff Berlin playing live with Brand X on their forthcoming tour, virus permitting, an article about the 10 best prog suites ever, Close to the Edge is number 3, a video from 1998 in Budapest to celebrate Open Your Eyes' birthday, a Hungarian article about the 50th anniversary of Time and a Word, the 11th episode of Roman Guzman's Yes Sounds show, and reviews of Yes Shows and Steve Howe's Love Is. Finally, for the community posts, Michael Handahan celebrated the 50th anniversary of All Things Must Pass by George Harrison. The first single from the album, My Sweet Lord, released on 23rd of November 1970, included future Yes member Alan White performing on the drums. Well, I did say it was anniversary week. Over on Twitter were the opportunities to vote for Steve Howe's Love Is and the Royal Affair tour live from Las Vegas in the Prog Report Awards, And Bill Hayes sent me some great new reaction videos. This time it's Owner of a Lonely Heart, Changes and Leave It, all listened to for the first time by Jamel. Ken Fuller sent me an article pondering how prog were Queen, which has some very interesting quotes from Steve Howe. And John Dee was interviewed on BBC Sounds, where he mentioned the world's greatest progressive rock band. Many thanks indeed to everyone who has been in touch in any way this week. Mark and I are heading back to the format where we look at two Yes albums and compare their relative strengths and weaknesses. In some ways, odd bedfellows, we've gone for 1987's Big Generator and 1980's Drama this time. Thinking generally, Big Generator could be seen as the often-termed difficult second album of a lineup which had enjoyed global success and reinvention with 90125, while Drama followed the cataclysm of the 1979 Paris sessions and the departure of both founding members, John Anderson and keyboard wizard Rick Wakeman. Drama was arguably the beginning of a different era, which looked both backwards and forwards at the same time, but one which ended up only spanning one album and one tour, at least at the time. The Buggles men Trevor Horn and Jeff Downes found themselves filling the largest possible shoes and having to create and release the album in double quick time before the planned tour kicked off. This is in stark contrast to Big Generator, which had such a tortuous and hugely extended birth, going through several different recording and mixing locations as well as production personnel. So, only 7 years apart, but a galaxy away from each other in lineup and musical terms. If we consider what the common elements across the two albums were, there isn't a great deal. The rhythm section of Alan White and Chris Squire spanned both, but lead guitars, lead vocals, keyboards and production were all different. Trevor Horn is a link, as he provided vocals on Drama and was initially involved with the production of Big Generator after his world-beating work on 90125, but that connection was broken when he claimed that personality clashes meant he couldn't complete the project. It would be easy to say that the strife in the Yes camp during the writing and recording of Big Generator is in stark contrast to the relatively plain sailing of Drama, but despite all songs on the latter being credited to Downes, Horn, Howe, Squire and White, Big Generator also seems to have been written by combinations of the musicians, apart from Love Will Find a Way and Holy Lamb by Rabin and Anderson respectively. Of course, that doesn't mean the process was harmonious on the later album, and neither does it mean that the composers listed are accurate. As usual, I'm sure a lot of the presentation on both records was down to contractual factors rather than musical ones. Anyway, what about the records themselves? The opening of Drama, Machine Messiah, is dark and foreboding, with some heavy guitar and brilliant swooping keyboard effects. Is this Yes? You better believe it. Squire's bass is at the front, and White's drumming like a man possessed. Every aspect of the construction of the song is sparkling and energetic. The vocal harmonies with the new voice thrown in are still very clearly Yes Choir, but there's a kind of sweetness to their melodies and approach which provides a brilliant foil to the darkness. The addition of the organ vamp from Vidor Staccato is inspired, and the whole song feels like you're on a massive shining locomotive hurtling along the track, only just in control. I have to say to the detractors that Jeff Dan's Moog solo here is perfectly judged, and as good as any Wakeman effort in the context of this song. It's searing and blistering against Squire's shuffle bass line, and the way the bass and then the lead guitar take over the keyboard figure is absolutely joyful. An incredible opening to the album, we return to the initial material and Howe's guitar conjures up some demonic fiery scenes, before we are reminded this is a Yes epic, with softer acoustic guitar strumming the main theme chords. This isn't Close to the Edge or Gates of Delirium, but it is complex, fascinating, progressive music, imbued with a new sense of excitement and vigour. Even the Downes poppy keyboard accompaniments fit perfectly, and Trevor Horn does a brilliant job with the vocals. Bass pedals fill the sound out even more as the music careers toward the dark side once again. Rather than the tentative steps of a band with two new core members, this sounds like a group at its zenith, a creative powerhouse which blends pop sensibilities with old-school heavy prog. 10.5 minutes of the most fabulous soundscape imaginable. Man in a White Car is infamous for its brevity, but listening again, the keyboard, timpani and other mallet texture is an unusual and fascinating one. The vocal melody is similarly intriguing, and although the term palate cleanser is overused, that's exactly what this tiny fragment is. I can't hear any Steve Howe guitars in there at all, and the unstoppable rush of Machine Messiah is separated from the final song on side one, Does It Really Happen, in a highly effective way. Would it be fair to say that Chris Squire, never a shrinking violet in musical terms, is given more freedom on Drama than on certain previous records? Perhaps. He certainly lets rip at the start of Does It Really Happen, with one of his most iconic, fast and insistent bass lines, which underpins the drums and dramatic keyboard texture. Perhaps more than any previous Yes record, Drama is jam-packed with memorable hooks which worm their way into your brain, never to leave. It could have been down to the Buggles pair, but who cares when the earworm tunes of this song lodge themselves in your mind. The band is tight as a Bill Bruford snare skin, and the production makes every individual instrument and voice pop with a bright, distinctive sound. If Rick Wakeman did a lot to improve Yes's arrangements when he joined the band, maybe Trevor Horn and Jeff Downes had the same effect in 1980. Certainly the themes and repeated sections of Does It Really Happen slot together in an extremely satisfying way, and certainly never seem bolted on. Keyboards, vocals, lead, bass guitar and drums all seem to be given equal status in this lineup, which is emphasised, at least instrumentally, by the brilliant prog epilogue to this song, which features a Squire solo, but wrapped inside a complex and dense texture, with keyboard figures rasping guitar chords and epic drumming, embellished with assorted other percussion. It's another towering piece. So to side two. I wonder how many Yes songs begin with Chris Squire's bass. Into the Lens does, alongside Alan White's bass drum. Snare, piano and bass then introduce another classical-inspired figure, followed by an imperious Howe sliding solo, which is a transport of delight for all Yes fans. Another long song? This one is over 8 minutes of changes and interlocked sections. Trevor Horn has a good opportunity to sing practically on his own before the I Am a Camera section appears. Again, it's a hook capable of landing the largest great white. Based on a Buggles tune but infused with all the best of Yes's progressive and aggressive attitude. As Mark and I have discussed several times recently, all the musicians who have joined the band from the beginning have been Yes fans themselves, with perhaps a couple of exceptions. This can easily be seen in this lineup, which perhaps made it an easier job to integrate themselves into the writing and recording of this record. The unison fragmented patterns hit even greater heights of synchronicity, which makes the music really exciting. Other bands can do hiatus moments when everything stops, but the swagger of this music and these musicians here is in a different league. What is it about Squire's bass playing that makes even a static, repeated note so compelling? Whatever it is, it's like magic in this context, and the mixing in of I Am a Camera on the vocoder is wonderful. It hasn't aged badly, which must have been a risk. The song blasts on with amazing Howe electric soloing. On this occasion, the balance of guitar heroics to other instruments is about right. Not always the case, and ending up with that sliding electric once again at the end is a stroke of genius. Howe makes the instrument his, and his alone in this rock idiom. The two final songs are comparatively short, with Run Through the Light 4 minutes and 43 seconds long. Jeff Downes starts this one off with quiet keyboard chords, but an interesting fragmentary texture appears, featuring all instruments and a sumptuous, fretless bass wielded by Trevor Horn, in what I think is a unique move for all of Yes's output. The vocal line is also fragmentary, with great Squire backing vocals and a driving drum pattern from White, as always on this record. Howe is on great form again, with extensive electric soloing, but this is a different kind of song, which shouldn't really hang together with its disparate sections and often bare orchestration. But it does, perhaps due to the production and sheer will. Not necessarily a crowd-pleaser in the way Machine Messiah is, I still find this song endlessly fascinating, and it feels like a bit of a sonic playground for the band who throw an eclectic mix of approaches at each other. Finally, we have Tempus Fugit. Once again, Dan shows off his own brand of keyboard fireworks, and when the groove sets off, we are on that express train again, contrasted with the quintessential yes, yes, vocoder moment. The harmony vocals here are stunning and answered in emphatic fashion by Howe's dirty guitar and Squire's imperious bass. It alternates between fast-running bass-driven excitement and lead guitar-driven mayhem. Perfectly in sync again, there are even several hiatus moments and other tricks to help the music swing from section to section, all of them tied together with lots of classically inspired techniques. Maybe that's one of the reasons Jeff Downes fitted in so well to the band. He had a different musical background to Wakeman, but he was just as capable of bringing approaches from different kinds of music to the Yes melting pot. Listen to the keyboard parts in this song and you'll be left in absolutely no doubt that Downes is a genuine prog master. Drama goes by in a flash, but it's also one of the most high energy and emphatic of all Yes records. It sounds nothing at all like a band just finding their feet, and more like one which was revelling in the interplay of old comrades. What an achievement. Even from the opening moments of Rhythm of Love, it's clear that Big Generator is a rather different beast to Drama. It's glossy, polished, and John Anderson's voice gives it an entirely different feel. Then there's Trevor Rabin's guitars and an overall pop-rock attitude. I love the sound, but its connections to the legacy that Drama was deliberately trying to evoke are somewhat tenuous. Of course, there's brilliant bass and drumming, but this is epic in the sense of its ability to fill the largest stadiums rather than any kind of progressive tendencies. Rabin's guitar solo is fabulous, but so far from Peter Banks's vision for Yes, which was continued and expanded by Steve Howe. A very effective song and very catchy. It's sing-along with an infectious beat and huge choruses. There is a touch of the Yes choir in there, but can we really say this is Yes? I'm not sure. So next is the title song Big Generator. The vocal extravaganza at the start does recall Leave It and other aspects of 90125, and even the Anderson vocal workouts right back to We Have Heaven. But then the rock bombast of the main riff appears. Again, I love it. And there's plenty of contrast with Anderson-led quieter passages, but the chorus is pure pop rock, and that's fine with its hard-rocking drums and insistent bass lines, but it certainly doesn't have the subtlety or the ingenuity of Drama. The harmonised, heavily altered Rabin guitar solo sound fits the theme brilliantly, and it's all a lot of fun with passages which speed up and the strut of that chorus making you nod your head. Slightly discordant vocal harmonies are thrown in, and overall it's a brilliantly produced and constructed song, but so very far from the traditional aesthetics of the band. On the other hand, Shoot High, Aim Low is entirely different. It opens in moody fashion, and I've always loved the Anderson-Rabin-League vocal tag team. It sounds very American, and the chorus is again stadium rock orientated, but there's something about the motion, the inexorable pulse, which is satisfying. Rabin's weird semi-acoustic solo is amazing, and that pulse continues. Anderson's vocals are capable of elevating any music and send shivers down the spine, as does the swing into the chorus. This is just great music. It seems to provide a more satisfactory development of songs like City of Love from the previous album, and despite no real elements identifiable as progressive, it's an engrossing 7-minute listen. Alan White shows his hard rock talents, and this points out once again his versatility as a drummer. The gradual fade towards the end is masterfully handled, and maybe there's more than a hint of Trevor Rabin's cinematic future here. It certainly feels like a huge widescreen production. Almost Like Love completes side one. Alan White leads us off in a high-energy poppy manner, using a pattern more at home in an 80s wham context. Anderson throws in an incredible amount of lyrics. It's almost like rapping. And there's quite a bit of his own solo approach here. The chorus is a pop-tastic blast, and this song is a happy-go-lucky romp with little sophistication. And that's not a criticism. It breaks free and enjoys itself. There's a more Yes-like alternative middle eight, but then we're back to the fun with Rabin, the master of his squiggly guitar solo art, which transforms between hard rock, blues, and some other grungier approach. Great stuff. Anderson leads a change towards the end, which helps to add a little more interest, but overall it's a simple but highly effective song. I can see why some fans were upset with the horn section, though. It's not the Yes of Relayer. The second side opens with a fantastic piece of string writing and arrangement by Trevor Rabin, and for a moment the song appears to be travelling in a direction of great interest, but then the main song appears and we lose the strings entirely. Great vocal harmony singing, great catchy vocal lines, great melodies, great guitar parts, great contrasting Anderson vocal passages, great hiatus back to the main theme. Everything's great about this song. However, it does feel like a Rabin song with members of Yes providing backup. Please don't misunderstand me, it's one of my favourite songs in the Yes discography. But we are so far away from the drama approach that it's difficult to see them as the same band. Final Eyes is next and clocks in at over 6 minutes. The strummed acoustic guitars sound more like Yes to me, with Anderson's wonderful vocals over the top. Lovely harmony vocals from Squire also helps. The sweep and shape of the vocal melody is pure Anderson, and after almost 2 minutes there's a significant change as Rabin seems to bolt a different song on, but it benefits hugely from a mobile Squire bass line, and actually the first of his characteristic approach I've noticed on the album so far. Of course we are back in stadium mode, but the tapestry of the opening material against the big stadium approach, against the Anderson high-pitched refrain, works brilliantly for me. It's definitely not a straight-ahead rock construction. There's much more interesting scaffolding here. There's even what sounds like an epilogue section with picked acoustic soloing from Rabin. Interesting and rewarding stuff. Similarly, I'm Running presents a combination of passages. The fiesta feel doesn't please some people, but when it segues into the mallet and soft keys passage, it creates a wonderful shiver of pleasure. Anderson's voice cuts through this beautifully, and the music builds via a classic Anderson storytelling passage and some very high Squire bass notes to a recapitulation of the mallets. There's an air of anticipation in this music, as if something is approaching, and it is. The chorus with those sumptuous Squire notes again, and then the calypso from the opening is back. A joyous piece of party music reminding me a little of the story of I from Patrick Mraz, but at a much smaller scale. If you analyse the structure, I think it's fairly simple, but the sections all fit together pleasingly, and there's an ebb and flow to the music which works wonderfully well, pointing forwards maybe, rather than back to drama, but that's not a bad thing. Rabin throws in some of his fastest work, and it's a pleasure to hear the whole Yes choir joining in at the end, probably multi-tracked or augmented to appear like a massed ensemble. It's much more inventive and interesting than some of the other songs on the album. And if it doesn't sound like drama, at least it employs a similar amount of creativity, surely a hallmark of Yes music. Finally, we have Holy Lamb, Song for Harmonic Convergence. The title couldn't be more Anderson if it tried. I've always loved the way this song builds from a simple melody to a big production number, complete with wordless chorus backing singers and massive drums. What an incredibly attractive chorus it is, with Anderson's ultra-positivity carrying the listener onwards. Solo keyboard, or is it synth electric guitar, is a nice touch, and I wish it didn't fade out like it does. For me, it could go on for another 10 minutes without losing my attention. So, it's a fascinating task to compare and contrast these two albums. Drama is an amazing piece of progressive rock, and stunning in its strength and sense of cohesion from a band who had been together for a very short time. Big Generator is a totally different beast. Pop, rock, stadium, musical gymnastics, and some colossal sounds make it an absolute blast, but it contains only shadows or echoes of either progressive rock or the band that holds its name. I think they're both equally effective and equally enjoyable in their own ways, and I'm delighted to say that Yes has this level of diversity in its catalogue. They're so different, though, that it's very difficult to rank them against each other. Maybe when I've listened to Mark's thoughts and had a chat, I may be able to come to a conclusion. Let's see.
Greetings, friends. So this week, Kevin and I are going to be doing a segment that seems to be quite popular amongst the YMP listeners, and that is the Great Album Battle. Yes, two albums face-to-face battling it out to see which is the superior album. Well, according to me. Of course, with everybody, it might be different. You might look at this differently, and you might have different opinions. And that's what's so great about this, because I'm very curious to read your opinions on both of these albums. So what are the two albums that are going to be battling it out this week? Well, this week we have a very interesting battle. First, we have in one corner the 1980 album that caused a lot of controversy and was looked upon sort of 50-50 with Yes fans, but in years later has become quite the favorite. We're talking about Drama, and that comes up against a record that, again, had some mixed reactions. Some people loved it, some people didn't like it at all. In fact, it's a record that made John Anderson leave the band again. And what record am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about Big Generator, 1987's Big Generator. Just like last time when we did this, instead of just, you know, talking randomly about my thoughts about the record, I divided the breakdown into six different categories. So those categories are artwork, songwriting, performances, like their performance on the album, popularity, production, and public opinion. And once again, public opinion is kind of based on what I've heard amongst my friends and also what I've read on the internet, whether it's on, you know, forums like Yes Fans or even on the YMP site, just getting the feel of what people think of these records just from reading things throughout the years. So without any further ado, Charlie, ring the bell. And we're off. So the first category is artwork. Now, artwork, obviously, we're talking about the album cover and probably the associated artwork that goes with the records themselves, whether if it's a gatefold or not, whether it's the inner sleeve or whatever. We're talking about artwork, but mainly we tend to take a look at the album cover itself. So on one hand, we have Drama. Now, Drama, the artwork was done by Mr. Roger Dean, a very well-known graphic artist and painter. And this, once again, is another fine example of a great Roger Dean album cover. I've always been a big fan of this cover. In fact, it was probably the main reason why I ended up buying this album. I had very little interest in this album when I was younger. For some reason, it just wasn't on my radar. I mean, when I looked at the back cover of it, there was nothing on there that really stuck out to me as songs that I had heard on the radio or I had seen on TV. So it was overlooked by me. But that album cover was always something that I was very fascinated with. Definitely the mountains in the background, the sort of dark, brooding sky above, and those cats running around in the front was definitely a very interesting and different cover for Yes. At least for me it was. And then we have the artwork for Big Generator. So the artwork for Big Generator was actually done by the designer Gary Mout, who had worked on 90125. Now, there's nothing necessarily wrong with this artwork. It's very simple, very clean. The background colors are interesting, not your sort of normal colors for an album cover. Very computerized again. The texting is very much like that computerized kind of font again. Sort of a continuation from where 90125 left off. Let's just put it like this. When you compare any art person, whether it's, you know, Peter Max or this gentleman to Roger Dean, I think you're always going to end up being second to Roger Dean. So the artwork, of course, is going to go to Roger Dean for this one. Now, the scoring system, and this is going to be the same as last time, it's going to be based out of 5. So 5 is the highest rating you can get. 0 will be the lowest. I ranked Drama a 4 out of 5, because while I really enjoyed it, I don't think it's the best album cover that Yes has. And I rated Big Generator a 2 out of 5. It's not the worst album cover that they've ever had, but it's not exactly, you know, in the middle, in my opinion. It's sort of a very simple, a little maybe too simple for my likings. I mean, I think I could have did this record cover, to be quite honest with you. So, yeah, I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5. Next up is songs. Now, songs, we're talking about the songs themselves, the strength of them, the songwriting, etc., etc. So, Drama. The songs in this album are fantastic. I'm not going to say always, but once I got into listening to this record, it took a little while, but the record definitely grew on me very strongly throughout the years. When I first heard the record, the song that connected with me immediately was Machine Messiah, the opening track. I mean, it had everything that I had already grown to love about Yes at that point. You know, long songs, lots of parts, some great acoustic guitar playing, some fantastic vocals on there, and Trevor Horn singing really didn't bother me all that much at all. I mean, it wasn't something that was completely, you know, out of left field. He was within the range of believability, let's just put it that way, for somebody who was going to replace John Anderson. The songs on this record, I thought, were very well done. It is not a very long album. There's only 6 songs on there, and one of them is only a minute 20, which is White Car. Interesting song, mainly a piano keyboard piece with some singing done by Trevor Horn. But I frankly think that as much as I like that song, that song could have been left off the album, and they could have put something a lot better or maybe a little bit longer even on that in place of that song. But there's other songs on here that are really well done. Into the Lens is very good. Tempest Fugit, of course, is fantastic. And one of the songs that has really grown on me over the years and is probably one of my favorites now is Run Through the Light. I really like that song. I think I actually got more connected to it when they did the album tour where they played the whole of Drama. I always thought that that was one of the songs they performed fantastically well. Overall, I think the songs in this record are very well done. Very strong. My only 2 points that are negative on here is I think that they could have made the album a little bit longer. And I think that White Car, as good as the song is, I just think that they could have replaced White Car with something a bit better. Now over to Big Generator. Now Big Generator was an album, believe it or not, that I took to rather quickly because it had a few songs on here that I had already heard quite a bit of before I actually bought the record. For example, The Rhythm of Love, which is a great song, very commercial. Again, we're talking about the commercial end of Yes now. So I think that song was a fantastic single and a great way to start the album. Also, you had Love Will Find a Way, which also had a video. It was played quite a bit here in Canada on Much Music. And I've always loved that song. I always thought that was probably one of my top 10 Yes songs. I've always loved Love Will Find a Way. Great, great song. The vocal performances are fantastic by both Trevor Rabin and John Anderson. I think, again, it's a very, very strong song. The other songs on here are good. Big Generator's good. Shoot High, Aim Low, I think, is one of those deep tracks that once you've listened to it a few times, it really grows on you. This is one of the songs that I think helped keep them in the race as far as the song rankings go for this, because it is a very good song. Almost Like Love, never been too big on that song. And to be quite honest, Side B, if we're going to look at it from two sides, I would say that Side B is the weaker side of the album. Finalize is okay. I'm Running, I never was into very much. And Holy Lamb is just a typical sort of John Anderson song that I could do without. I wouldn't probably necessarily strike it from the record, but if it wasn't on there for whatever reason, I wouldn't make a big deal out of it. So overall, I still think that I have to give Drama the edge, even just slightly. So I scored it 4 for Drama and 3.5 for Big Generator, because I still think that while there's probably more to like, it's a longer record, Big Generator, I still think, though, that the quality of the songs are slightly better on Drama over Big Generator. Next, we got Performances. Now, this I scored even, 3-3. I think both albums were performed very well. At this point, Yes was a well-oiled machine when they were doing Big Generator. They had just come off a long tour, and while it took them forever to make this album, when they started doing it with Trevor and Alan and Chris, you know, they were, like I said, a well-oiled machine. So their performances were very good on that record, and even the vocals were excellent on this record. They had a lot of trouble with the, you know, production end of it, with producers coming and going to finish it, but that's another story. Drama is another record that I'm very surprised about the outcome, because they had 2 new members of the band at that point. And I actually think that for jumping into the fire like they did, they performed very well. Trevor Horn's vocals are very well done, and Jeff Downs does some great, great keyboard playing on this record. It's probably my favorite record that Jeff Downs plays on as far as Yes albums go. But still, I don't think one is better than the other, so I'm going to just rank it 3-3. Next, we have Popularity. Now, this is interesting because Drama, like I said, when it first came out, I think that lots of people were expecting it to be a Yes record as per normal. But once people found out that there were new people in it, I think the popularity of it was sort of not that popular at first, but this is a record that kind of grew in popularity throughout the years. And at this point, I think it's probably one of the more popular Yes records, to be quite honest with you. So I scored that a 4. And Big Generator, I also scored 4, mainly because this record came out in 87. And when it did, it was a million seller record. I mean, you can't say that about Drama. And in comparison, though, what's interesting, if you look at how it charted, Drama went to number 2 in the UK, number 18 in the US, and number 50 in Germany. And Big Generator went number 15 in the US, number 17 in the UK, and number 25, though, in Germany. But Big Generator still was a million seller record, and Drama wasn't. So with all these things in mind, I kind of had to give it a tie, because I think Big Generator was the more popular of the two out of the chute when they first were released. But as time has gone by, I think what has happened is the complete opposite. While Big Generator was popular when it first came out and has become less popular now, Drama ended up being less popular at the beginning and much more popular now. So There we go, 4-4. Now, let's go to production. Now, this is going to be something that's going to be debated, I'm sure, but I scored it like this. Drama, I gave it a 3 out of 5, and Big Generator, I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. I mean, any way you slice it, I still think that Big Generator sounds better. Now, some people are going to say, oh, I don't like it. It's too much treble on there. It's too top-endy. It doesn't sound as full, whatever. But I still think that it sounds sonically better. I mean, it did have Trevor Horn production on it initially, and a lot of it is still there, even though I think Trevor Rabin started taking over later on in the, you know, workings of this record. It's still a sonically pleasing record to me. Drama is not a bad record. Once again, Eddie Ofurd started with the band, but never did the full production of it. I believe he just did the whole basic tracks, which is just the drums, bass, and probably early guitar stuff with them. And I think it was just concluded with the band. Interesting in that both albums had producers start it, but not finish it. But I still think overall the production work on Big Generator is better than Drama. So I'm going to give it the higher score of 4.5 for Big Generator and 3 for Drama. That leaves us with the last category, which is public opinion. Now, I think this is going to be pretty simple to take a look at, in my opinion. I scored it 4 out of 5 for Drama and 3 out of 5 for Big Generator. Now, like I said before, both albums have their, you know, people who love it and then the people who hate it. With that said, I still think that Drama is the more popular of the two now, especially. Like I said, I think that Drama has definitely increased in popularity over the years, whether it's because it was never a record that was really, really fondly looked at the beginning and sort of was put, you know, under the carpet for many years. A lot of it had to do with getting Benoit David into the band because he was very, you know, into performing those songs live. And so once they did it, Yes fans were sort of surprised, I think, at first, and were very happy to have songs that are almost looked at as new songs because they never heard them live before. So I think that's what increased the popularity greatly. And as years have gone by, I think Big Generator kind of suffered from the other opinion where it was like, it's a kind of 80s record. It isn't really the style of Yes that we like and enjoy. It doesn't have that kind of classic Yes sound to it. So I think overall the opinion on Big Generator is that people probably still pull it out every once in a while, but it's not a very often listened to album. Probably, and just mainly because of that, I think it's because it was from a period that Yes fans either stayed with the band or they abandoned them. So I think with that said, more people were more likely to listen to Drama more than Big Generator. But then again, that's just my opinion. I'm very curious to hear what you guys think about it. And I'm also very curious to hear what Kevin has to say about it. So the final score, after all this said and done, is Drama is the victor, and not by very much, actually. The final score is 22 out of 30 for Drama and 20 out of 30 for Big Generator. So let's go over to Kevin and talk to him further about these two fine records.
Drama and Big Generator to talk about, and Mark is here with me now. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Struggling with my internet a bit, but I have discovered a way, as you can see, to get this going.
Yes, so you're coming in to us via Skype on your phone, is that right?
That's correct.
Fantastic. Okay. Right, well, I certainly loved the the bell that you used on your review. That's a great touch, I thought. And you made, as always, some very interesting points that we'll go through now. The artwork, I didn't realize it was the same artist as 90125, and it makes a lot of sense because there certainly is that progression, isn't there, from the 90125 logo. He's obviously developed that for Big Generator, and I've always liked it, but I suppose it is, as soon as you do things on computers of the day, particularly back in the 1980s, it tends to get a bit stuck, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is interesting how that happens. It's like, it's almost like when you're using a certain reverb in the studio that's traced back to an 80s sound. It's almost like the computers that you use from that time, you know, kind of trace you back to that time as well. It's like that, those early Apple computers, they always had that kind of certain look to them when they had like the fonts that they used and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's very similar as well. I noticed that the font on the, you know, the text that they used for both albums looked pretty similar to me.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And the funny thing is that in a lot of ways, those early sort of experimental computers, I suppose they were in a way, they do have a similar look. And looking back now, you suddenly realize that a lot of the time, these artists who were using this equipment for the first time ever were actually just using the standard set of fonts. They weren't putting anything extra into the typography. They were just, you know, selecting one of the fonts from the palette that they had, which is fair enough. But nowadays, it just seems like a fairly mad thing to do, because it does get stuck in that kind of an era, which is not something you can say for Roger Dean. And I don't know how much over the years he's done with computer-aided design work, but certainly for the covers that I know that he's done, he seems to have stuck with those traditional techniques. And maybe that's part of the reason why his images and album covers particularly are timeless.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like you said, you know, when you're stuck with only a certain amount of tools to use, that's the problem with using the computer back then. Because now if you go online, you can download like thousands of different kinds of fonts that you can put into your computer to use. But back then, like you said, they only had like, you know, maybe the Times Roman and maybe one or two other ones. And then that one kind of, you know, the computerized looking text, you know, that they can put on there. But when you're an artist like Roger Dean, the only thing you're limited by is your imagination, because everything comes from his hands and his, you know, how he paints and how he draws, you know, that's why his artwork would always be better, I think, than most people's, you know, computerized stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And it's interesting, isn't it, that I suppose in, as we've mentioned before, drama is deliberately looking back, isn't it, into Yes's past, into their history, into the 70s, and bypassing going for the One and Tomato covers and trying to get right back to that whole Roger Dean thing. And I was interested to see someone reminded me. I did actually know about this before, I think, but Roger Dean said in one of his recent videos that he had actually suggested one of his paintings for Going for the One, which wasn't ever used in the end. And in fact, that's for most fans would have been a better thing, and tie that into the other albums in that so-called main sequence. And so they were looking back in some ways then, and Big Generator 90125 trying to look forward. But just straight after that looking forward, you've got ABWH and Union, both with Roger Dean covers. And I can't really imagine, I can't imagine Yes ever being happy to create an album, live or studio album nowadays, without Roger Dean artwork, can you?
No, I can't imagine it either. I think that it's pretty much, you know, a given that once there's a Yes record, it's going to be, you know, Roger Dean doing the artwork for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm very happy about that. And looking around me here as I record all the fantastic Roger Dean artwork that I've got. I mean, even to the extent of Progeny and other box sets, studio albums, wonderful Dean artwork there. Wonderful. So, back to drama then, the length of drama. Good point that you made about it being really quite short. And I wonder how much of that was to do with the lack of time that they had. You know, these two members, they had all the problems of getting used to playing with this new band and integrating themselves in there. And there were dates set, weren't there, for the tour. So they knew that they had to finish this in double quick time. You know, even things like Fly From Here, which was a pretty well-formed song at the time, didn't make it on there. So do you think it had a lot to do with just the sheer lack of time?
Yeah, I think so, because don't forget they had that concert, you know, already that tour set to do. And, you know, they luckily found two people just in time so that, you know, they could have went in and did the tour. But the funny thing is that, you know, logically, bands nowadays would have probably just did that. Okay, let's count our blessings. We got two members and let's go do the tour. But these guys went ahead and did a full record, you know, and they were lucky that they had material from Trevor and Jeff to use as well on there. So that would have helped out, obviously, with, you know, I Am a Camera and all that, right? So,
yeah.
But I think the record turned out fantastic for the amount of time that they had. I mean, that just goes to show the level of musicianship and the level of their songwriting that they were able to get together and gel together and do it.
Absolutely. What about Fly From Here, though? I mean, it could have ended up on Drama. Do you think that would have fitted in with the rest of the Drama material?
I think so. I think, again, they were just pressed for time. I think that if they were said, if the record company said, okay, listen, you guys have an extra couple of weeks to finish up the record, then maybe they would have sat down and did it, because they seemed very happy with it, like happy enough to perform it live. Yes. I mean, that goes to show you how much they enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. It was interesting as well that you mentioned that very short song, Man in a White Car, and I suppose that could have been developed, not quite in the way that they did it live, because they turned that into a medley with Video Killed the Radio Star, which didn't go down very well with some Yes fans. So I'm not sure that would have been a good idea, but they could have extended that as well, I suppose. And the other short, moving on to Big Generator, the other short song on there, Holy Lamb, which you're not as keen as I am on, that's for certain. It's that's an interesting one as well, because that's one of the few elements, I think, which really links Big Generator back to the history of the band, because it seems to have more of a John Anderson influence on it. Certainly the lyrics and the whole theme of the song seems very, very Yes orientated, which the rest of Big Generator really isn't. But how much do you see Big Generator as a progression from 90125? Apart from certain parts of it, I'm not convinced that it is particularly a follow-up, you know, and supposed to sound similar.
Well, I mean, there's obviously a lot of elements in there that link it together. I mean, the way Trevor Raven plays guitar, the way he writes songs, his vocals, those are all things that tie to it. There's also stuff like the production that Trevor Horn started with them, but, you know, he didn't finish the record. But a lot of his polish is already noticeably on there. And of course, Trevor, being a producer himself, probably picked up a lot of these things and it just continued through him. Mm. But having John include Holy Lamb, as much as I'm not a huge fan of this song, I think it was a smart idea, though, because for the older Yes fans, they had something to kind of, you know, grasp onto and say, this is like familiar, like the old pair of shoes that one's comfortable wearing, you know. That's what Holy Lamb kind of is. It's like the old comfortable underwear that people like to wear sometimes, right? So, you know, I know I'll get probably eggs thrown at me for saying comparing Holy Lamb to an old pair of underwear, but, you know, just for the sake of comparison, I think that that's kind of what it is. I mean, it's 100% John Anderson. The lyrics, the sort of simplistic acoustic guitar strumming. But no matter how much I like it or dislike it, one thing is for sure, it has a vibe to it, and it definitely has that sort of feeling to it. When you listen to it, it's very reverbed and very lush sounding. So I think it belongs on the record, to be honest.
Yeah. And it's interesting what you say about that, and I noticed that as well, that Eddie Offord started off Drama and Trevor Horn started off Big Generator, neither of them continuing really to finish the thing off, which is an interesting parallel. And I wonder how much of the success of Drama's sound was actually down to Trevor Horn's production skills. So that could be a link, couldn't it? The fact that you know, maybe he did more, you know, physically with the board, turning the knobs, doing the mixing after Eddie Offord had left. And as you said in your piece, maybe quite a bit of Horn is left on Big Generator as well. So perhaps actually Trevor Horn has more of an influence over these two records and therefore over quite a bit of Yes's sound at these certain times anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the one difference, though, of course, is that Eddie Offord couldn't complete the record, not because he was having any kind of conflict with the guys, but I think because he was committed to another record and could only commit certain amount of time with Yes.
Yeah.
So, whereas Trevor Horn just had it up to here with them at that point, you know, you know, going to castles here and going here and, you know, let's go out and spend 3 days, you know, eating lavish meals and then let's go record. So they were just acting like millionaires and they were just he was getting fed up with them, right? So that's kind of the big difference there. But definitely it's an excellent point you bring up, though, about how much influence Trevor Horn has on the sound of both of those records.
Yes, indeed. And also I'm thinking about the feel of the two records. For all its effects and things, I think that Drama feels quite retrospective, quite looking back to a very analog version of the band, perhaps. Whereas Big Generator is very much looking forward and trying to be very up to date, if not actually in the future, in terms of its production, and is very, as I said in mine, shiny and new and exciting style of production. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer the analog drama or the electronic Big Generator?
Well, I kind of prefer, honestly, the analog feel of drama more. I mean, I think the drums and the bass guitar sound absolutely fantastic on that record. They have such a great warmth to them. And the thing you got to remember, too, about Big Generator is that Trevor Raven has been always this guy who's been chasing technology, being the first to do this, the first to do that. I mean, look at Talk. I mean, that was that kind of recording process. He was the very first one to start doing that sort of stuff. And it was a complete nightmare doing it. But in the end, we get a great record out of it. But a lot of people sometimes don't like this sort of digital sound. Some people find it rather cold sounding. Some people think that there's a little bit too much top end on the sound overall because of it. I mean, if you listen to the vocals, for example, like if you listen to like Love Will Find the Way and then listen to the beginning of The Calling, some people find those vocals very harsh sounding because of the digital nature of it. Whereas you listen to something like, you know, the stuff that's on Drama, while there's not as much huge vocalizations on there, the vocals sound very smooth and very easy to listen to.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And one of the other aspects of Big Generator, which listening this time straight after Drama did stick out to me, was the treatment of the drums. And I'm not sure I liked the way they were treated on Big Generator as much. I mean, you'll know a lot more about the production techniques than I do. But as you say, there's a bit of a lack of depth, a bit of a lack of complexity of the sound with the drums on Big Generator. I mean, they don't go as far as, you know, the Simmons drums Bill Bruford used on ABWH, but they certainly were treated, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is I was reading a lot of stuff about both records as we were preparing for this, but as much as it is very much in the digital realm, as far as, you know, lots of digital kind of reverbs and stuff like that used for processing the drums, because there's obviously a lot of processing and lots of heavy EQing on Alan's drums. But for example, a song like Shoot High, Aim Low, that reverb that's on there was actually naturally captured from the castle that they were in, the acoustics. That was a natural reverb rather than electronically added. So they did try very hard to add in some natural elements of it, because they don't think they wanted to have it completely in the digital world. No. They wanted to still capture some of the natural aspects of it.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, fair enough. The last thing I wanted to talk about is keyboards. Now, I was really impressed. I was listening very carefully to Jeff Danz's work on Drama there, and he really does come over as an authentic prog keyboardist there, with his Moog soloing and all the effects and so on, doesn't he? And particularly for those who tend to knock Jeff Downes' abilities and approach, on this album, I think he's one of the prog masters, isn't he?
Oh yeah, I mean, look, I've never had any issue with Jeff Downes, with the music that he's written and he's recorded himself, whether it's on Yes albums or otherwise. Anything that I think that he's written himself, I think is always brilliant and sounds fantastic. I mean, Drama is probably one of his high points of his recording career, I think. I mean, some of the Moog work that he does on these songs, like, you know, Tempest Fugit and all these other songs, even like Machine Messiah, are just absolutely fantastic. I think where he just struggles is sometimes when he has to copy other keyboard player styles, because, you know, some keyboard players don't have an easy time to do it. I mean, Igor Koryshev, I think, can copy any kind of Yes style and do it perfectly, and that's why I've always loved him. But Jeff Downes struggles with that a bit. But that's not to say that he's not a good keyboard player. I think that he does his stuff fantastically well, and there are songs that over the years he's improved on immensely. I think And You and I is a song that he's improved on leaps and bounds since he got back with Yes.
Yeah. And certainly, as you say, a definite career high point for him, Drama. And I'm sure he'd agree. But keyboards on Big Generator, you get the feeling that there's not a lot of Tony Kaye in there. And to be honest, it's not a very keyboard heavy album at all, is it?
There's keyboards in there, but I get the feeling that whenever you hear a Hammond organ, we're listening to Tony Kaye. Mm. And whenever we're hearing anything else that's slightly more in the modernized synth world, I think we're listening to Trevor Rabin a lot more there.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Tony Kaye's strength is his organ work. Even whether we look back at the very beginning or if we look now, when you give him a Hammond organ, the man is like next to nobody. You know, he's pretty well a standout on the organ. But, you know, he's never been very comfortable, and he'll even say it himself with some of the other, you know, modernistic keyboards. And even at that time, I'm sure there were still keyboards that he didn't like at that point.
Yeah, that's right. And there certainly aren't a lot. I can't think of any off the top of my head of actual Moog-type keyboard solos that you might expect to see in an album from Yes. Maybe you wouldn't. Maybe I'm completely wrong about that. But certainly not a lot of keyboard soloing. That's definitely true, I think, about Big Generator. Well, that's been absolutely fascinating. And I suppose I have to do my rating. You've already given yours. So I've got to choose one of these. And I think overall I have to go for Drama. And that's because it looks back and I think it looks forward. I think it's got a fantastic live analog sound to it. The complexity and the amazing aspect of it that these were two new members and they got on with it so quickly in the studio. Absolute masters of putting the thing together in the studio, I think. Big Generator I like as well. I enjoy listening to it. It's a great record. Whether it's as good a Yes album is debatable. So if I had to rate the two, I would rate Drama higher than Big Generator. But of course, don't take our word for it. You have your say on the show notes for this week. Please, which would you prefer, Drama or Big Generator? For the moment, Mark, thank you very much indeed.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
This is Miguel Falcão at miguelbass.com. You are listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Established in 2011, this is Two Fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band.
Just before we go, here's half of the YMP patrons. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. And half of those Yes Music Podcast patrons are Mark James Lang, Martin Kelberg, Michael O'Connor, Miguel Falcao, Neil Caffrey, Paul Hales, Paul Tomei, Paul Wilson, Lobate Scarp, Rachel Hadaway, Mark Zarkol Bags, Robert Nasa, Scott Colombo, Scott Smith, Simon Barrow, Stephen Lamb, Steve Dill, Steve Perry, Steve Rode, Steve Scott, Stephen Raw, Terence Sadler, Tim Stannard, Todd Dudley, Tony Handley, Joseph Cottrell, Keith Hoisington, William Hayes, and Alan Begg. As always, continued thanks to Robert and David. So thank you very much indeed to those parents. If you'd like to join them in order to help keep the lights on here at YMP Towers, then please go along to Patreon, patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast, or just click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We hope to be back next week, but in the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.